guest time.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Clandestine. I'm Tom Secker, coming to you from the grassy knolls of North Yorkshire, and this is episode 121, Operation Terror.
50 billion barrels of oil in the Caspian Sea, but I can't get it out. We need to use our military might to take that oil. The problem is the pacifist mindset of the American people. To wake them up, we need a catastrophic and catalyzing event, like a new Pearl Harbor.
Our terrorists will attack the three pillars of American society: commerce, the military, and the government.
We are going to make the destruction of the Twin Towers by terrorists look as genuine as possible.
We've developed a weapon that cannot be used against any of our enemies. I don't know what we're going to use it for.
He betrayed me and this country. Terminate him.
What the hell is going on here?
Of course the order's still standing.
Fire!
This week, I am joined by Robbie Martin and Pierce Redmond to review and analyse the low-budget conspiracy thriller Operation Terror. We analyse the plot, where a member of the Council on Foreign Relations recruits a CIA officer to prepare and carry out the 9/11 attacks, and why this is unrealistic. We note several examples of how the film incorporates elements from all over 9/11 conspiracy lore, but especially from Pilots for 9/11 Truth, one of the more wacky parts of the Truth movement. We ask whether the film is fan service for 9/11 truthers, and conclude that it reflects and represents a lot of the real characteristics of the 9/11 movement. Well, welcome both of you. I'm very lucky today to have not just one, but two guests to be talking about this film, Operation Terror. So, Pierce, how are you doing?
Good, Tom. I'm glad to be here with you and Robbie to discuss Operation Terror.
And how are you, Robbie?
I'm doing pretty good, Tom.
Well, obviously we're going to be talking about this film. It's a 2012 pretty low-budget thriller about a conspiracy to carry out 9/11. So, obviously, spoilers, 9/11 happens. But before we get into the plot and some of the details, I just wanted to get your guys' overall impressions and reactions to the film, because I have a lot of reservations and problems with it. But at the same time, I was quite impressed by what they'd managed to put together. I thought it wasn't half bad. It's certainly not something I would say don't watch. I think people should watch it. But Pierce, I'm sure you've got an opinion. I'm sure you're raring to leap in with a view on all of this. What were your kind of overall reactions to the film?
Well, I surprisingly enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. It, as you said, it is a low-budget conspiracy thriller. So the special effects and things like that, particularly the Bin Laden's beard, are especially atrocious. But that aside, I actually thought the movie was it does a very good job of sort of discussing and breaking down a whole lot of the different sort of strands of 9/11. The filmmakers and the writer are very well versed in conspiracy culture, not even just specific to 9/11. And that's always kind of fun and fascinating, especially I think for people like us that are sort of invested or immersed in this culture. And of all things, there's quite a bit of comedy I found in the movie that was some really like laugh out loud moments that I'm sure we'll touch on later. I don't think that was necessarily the intended reaction, but it's that's what it was like for me. So yeah, I enjoyed the movie. I would definitely recommend it to people who haven't seen it, if for no other reason than there aren't really any other like 9/11 conspiracy thrillers of this nature. So it's important just in that regard. But yeah, I enjoyed it, although I obviously have lots of problems with it that we'll get to.
Robbie, same question. Any preliminary thoughts or anything you particularly want to throw out there before we get into some of these details?
Yeah, I mean, my initial reaction to it, I think, mirrored Pierce's. It was when I went into it, I remember seeing the trailer for it, which, I mean, no, I want to try to avoid, you know, throwing it, trash talking the movie in general, because I do think it's impressive what they've been able to pull off. But I do think that the trailer was a very poor representation of actually how good some aspects of the movie were, surprisingly. So when I watched it, I was expecting it to be a lot more schlocky and a lot more low budget feeling than it actually was. And one of the things that impressed me about it that Pierce touched on was how they were able to connect so many strands of 9/11 conspiracy lore together to sort of form into a coherent narrative. But what comes with that, I think technically, if you try to do that, like if you try to take the top 10 best, you know, story threads from 9/11 and then combine it together into a singular narrative, you're going to have some odd anomalies and things that pop up that just seem completely ridiculous, just completely organically by doing that. And I think, and we could talk about that later, but I think one of the main ones that jumped out to me was that they still can't get around that problem of the voice morphing theory, which I could speak on later, is completely ludicrous. It's as ludicrous as saying that CGI holograms were possible on that during that time period. Audio speech synthesis was nowhere near good enough at that time to be able to convince a relative, you know, that you're speaking to them in their son's voice. So those are my initial thoughts on it.
Okay. I mean, we will get into that later, actually, because that's something that Pierce and I, we were discussing the other night somewhat. So in the film, the story begins in September 1999, which is my first big problem with it, is that it doesn't go back any earlier than that. But okay. A senior member of the Council on Foreign Affairs, the Council on Foreign Relations, summons a CIA operative and basically tells him to do 9/11. He then sets out, he recruits thermite specialists and drone technicians and all sorts of things like that, and among the small group of them, they basically carry off the operation. I did find it amusing that the idea for the particular type of attack that they were going to do originates with a Hollywood screenwriter. I'm not quite sure where they were going with this. I think it's...
with a Jewish name.
Yeah. And he's gay, too.
Oh, yes? I didn't catch that from the movie.
They actually call
him a faggot. I forgot about that. Okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
No, you're right. But I thought this was a little bit naive of them, because they were acting like this whole notion of crashing a plane into a building was, you know, no one had ever thought of this before, when in reality this idea had been bouncing around both in practice and in like theory papers and training exercises and so on for 20 years. So I think they were stretching credibility a little far there, and I'm not quite sure what sort of point they were trying to make. But yeah, Pierce, any ideas on why they incorporated this Hollywood screenwriter into this story?
I think at first I actually kind of thought it was maybe not clever, but I thought it was interesting that they, or not so much that the Hollywood screenwriter Michael Goldberg in the film, not that he sort of dreams this all up, but just the idea that they were sort of presenting that, you know, the intelligence apparatus does work with Hollywood. So I thought that was kind of, you know, an interesting sort of a plot device that they used. I will say, though, on further inspection of the writer and producer of the film, Art Olivier, I think his, you know, his sort of worldview is much more the sort of reason behind why they have a gay Jewish Hollywood executive who dreams this up, because Art Olivier definitely kind of subscribes to the Jews run the world, Jews run Hollywood, the Zionists are in control of the media, sort of a worldview of everything. So I think that was kind of more, I actually found that to be sort of the one of the moments where the sort of like politics of the film kind of were sort of being, you know, we're kind of getting hit over the head with it. And I thought it kind of like takes you away from the greater like story that they're sort of trying mm-hmm. to put out there. So there's so much interesting stuff about, as Robbie was saying, 9/11 lore. And then, you know, but then to have the gay Hollywood Jew, you know, dreaming this all up, it just sort of seemed like they were going to kind of lose people with that sort of a thing. But mm-hmm. I think that really is Art Olivier's sort of dig at Hollywood and the Zionists that control it. And obviously Art Olivier didn't get any funding from Hollywood from this. And he's actually now kind of he works a lot in Iran, and he gets a lot of the funding for his projects from, you know, Iranian cultural groups and things like that, in part because he, you know, is willing or was willing to go on like press TV and talk about how Hollywood is run by the Zionists. So I think this is that sort of a device that they've put in there is a bit more of Art Olivier's personal views. But as I said, I think it is interesting that they put out the idea that the intelligence state would work with Hollywood talent. And it sort of reminded me, Tom, in Matt Alford's book, The Writer with No Hands, and the sort of idea that Matt puts out that Gary DeVore, because of his talents as a creative person in Hollywood, that he might have been involved in psychological operations and things like that in Panama. And of course, there is an overt reference to Operation Just Cause mm-hmm. In the film, which took out Noriega. So I don't know. I found that, you know, I found it interesting, but a little kind of silly. You know, and of course, he's one of the few sort of truly evil characters in the movie, along with the guy that runs the council. You know, Goldberg is just sort of seen, you know, he is the evil gay Jew from Hollywood that wants to corrupt us all or something like that. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, Robbie, I mean, I know you wanted to get into some of these, the creative people behind this film, some of their backgrounds and their other films, and you maybe wanted to get into some of the influences or, like, inspiration for this movie. But yeah, what did you make of this whole Hollywood screenwriter storyline or how that all links up?
Well, I did think, I mean, it was definitely one of the things that stood out in the movie as being more of an invention of the writer himself rather than something he was pulling from actual things that were heavily, you know, circulating in the 9/11 conspiracy movement. So it definitely, it didn't jar me that much when I saw it, because right off the bat, what sort of threw me off even more was the James McCullough was his name, that the character they came up with for the head of the Council on Foreign Affairs, because I guess after doing a lot of, you know, coming out the other end of the 9/11 rabbit hole, I realized sort of more, I guess, more realistically what role think tanks play in all of this. Sort of in their a cog in the military industrial complex wheel, so to speak. So I thought it was, that struck me as naive that, you know, let's say it was supposed to be the head of PNAC or the Council on Foreign Relations, that they would be, that it would be that character that would call in some CIA head and ask them basically to do 9/11, where I almost was hoping that the writer would have, like, you know, the head of SAIC or Raytheon or, you know, a huge investor in one of those companies be the one to sort of float the idea out, and instead of a think tank guy. But I guess maybe overall that's more of a minor criticism. But that struck me as surprising that there was at the same time a complexity and a huge swath of knowledge they were working from that's contained within the 9/11 conspiracy movement, but at the same time not as much knowledge about sort of the defense contractors and the companies in ways that how they fit into the whole, the big picture of 9/11, where they more left that for like a side plot about the sort of people at Raytheon who were hired to secretly work on commercial airliners as drones. So they do mention defense contractors in it, but not in the ways that I was sort of hoping or preferring that they would. So that was an initial complaint. So I feel like maybe it's that my overall complaint was it's a little oversimplified on, you know, different facets of people and groups who are working on this. They don't bring up, I don't even know if they bring up Saudi patsies or the Saudi Arabia angle in this. Do they? Did I miss that?
No,
they
know really,
they bring up patsies. Yeah. So they bring up patsies, but not the idea that there were other intelligence agencies possibly involved or anything like that. So there are a lot of interesting things missing, omitted from the movie, but there are also interesting things that they decided to put in, which are kind of wacky as well. And one of those things I noticed right off the bat was clearly whoever wrote this is a big fan of pilots for 9/11 Truth, because they brought up the planes being unable to fly above 500 miles per hour at sea level thing, which is a hotly debated topic, which a lot of people in the 9/11 Truth movement believe is sort of a stealth means to insert that there were no planes on 9/11, that pilots for 9/11 Truth is actually trying to subversively insert disinfo into the movement, saying that the planes were actually holograms or weren't real aluminum planes. There were something else. So I know that's still very hotly debated in 9/11 conspiracy lore. So I thought that was interesting, but this is, I guess it's worth remembering, this is from 2012. So I feel like pilots for 9/11 Truth was more accepted back then in the movement, and now it's not as much within the more like serious truthers. So, and I guess in terms of the influences, I mean, there was definitely an Oliver Stone influence, obviously, in there. But that was more, I guess, in terms of the structure of the movie, but the actual style of it reminded me of David Mamet. The snappy dialogue, the amount of F-bombs dropped throughout the movie, the main character, the CIA guy, Aaron Delgado, that character was fucking hilarious. I mean, he was basically like, I thought he almost seemed like he was lifted out of the David Mamet classic, Glengarry Glen Ross. He was almost like the Al Pacino character in that film. So I thought that was actually pleasantly surprising, is that there was some stuff in there that was highly entertaining, sort of, you know, profanity laced, angry dialogue. So I thought that was a great inclusion into the movie, especially the end. And we get to that later on, but the end rant he goes on about how he's going to kill all the people that fucked up the operation. I thought that was hilarious. I mean, I actually laughed out loud several times, I think, in parts where it was supposed to be funny. Like, yeah, there was some funny bad CGI and stuff, but like some of it was actually like, wow, that's actually pretty well written and funny as fuck. So
no, you were saying when we were chatting just before we started recording that you thought, you know, the directing is all over the place, the tone of the film is all over the place. At times it's comedy, at times it's a thriller, at times it's kind of a psychological drama, other times it's political. You're not really sure at any point what sort of film this is supposed to be. But the actual script underlying that does weave together a lot of different 9/11 conspiracy memes into a pretty cohesive narrative. And let's face it, lots of Hollywood films don't have particularly cohesive narratives. So I think that the writer did a pretty good job. I will say, one of the things that, since we've already started getting into bugbears and bitching about the film, one of the things that pissed me off was the old bullshit about the FBI doing WTC 93. Because that is so commonly repeated and commonly recycled, and it's always based on the same, like, 2-minute YouTube clip with no context or other knowledge of the case. And that's pissed me off for years, quite frankly. So, I didn't like seeing that in the movie. But you're right, though, Robbie. They did include like all that stuff about firing a missile at the building and having pods on the underside of the aircraft so that they could control them by remote. And this was stuff that, like, Phil Jahan and people were pushing in 2002, 2003, like right in some of the very early days of the so-called 9/11 Truth movement. And yet they took it from that all the way through to stuff that wasn't even known about until years later. They really did quite a good job of drawing on the whole decade of the 9/11 movement prior to the film being made. So
They did, and they did. I mean, I think they did, and they didn't, because there were a lot of things, like you just said, they were from really early on in the truth movement that I felt had been sort of debunked, like the idea of missiles having to hit the towers before the planes penetrated. But I was surprised that they didn't include a lot of stuff that I think would have maybe fleshed out the movie a little, maybe made it a little more interesting. That stuff that like writers like Kevin Ryan have compiled about people like Rudy Giuliani, other Bush officials. They only implicate literally two Bush officials in it, Cheney and Scooter Libby, which was a little odd, I thought, and seemed like that part didn't seem fully fleshed out to me. Rudy Giuliani and the cleanup operation and Jerome Hauer. I don't even think they mentioned Jerome Hauer. They mentioned Tripod 2, the bioterror drill that Rudy Giuliani and FEMA were in charge of on the morning, or I think on the day before 9/11. I think they could have included more stuff to sort of flesh out the characters, I guess, more. But I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different things they could have added to it. They decided not to, but they did add stuff like Stephen Jones, nanothermite was in there. So they do take stuff from later on in the movement as well. I just felt they could have included more stuff, but they did. And if the guy who made it is, sort of a Zionism obsessed, that the Jews control everything kind of guy, I don't know. I actually don't know much about Art Olivier, but if he is one of those guys, I'm surprised nothing about Israel or the Israeli art students come up at all in the movie either. So that's an interesting omission if that's the direction he's coming from. But then again, there's so many things you could include that you would almost have to decide what, you would have to be really specific about what you were going to include and what you weren't, because it's simply too much to include in a single film.
They did certainly face that problem, that how do you even begin to try and tell that story in 2 hours? Even as a speculative story, it's still very, very difficult. One other little complaint I'm going to make before I hand it over to you, Pierce. The scene where they go and meet bin Laden in Afghanistan and give him some money and explosives, which is by far the most cartoonish scene in the whole film. And I do wonder, is that because they're saying, bin Laden is some kind of cartoon? Maybe it was just badly done. The guy that's with bin Laden, that's supposed to be Ali Mohammed. But in reality, he'd already been imprisoned for a year by that point. So I thought that was like kind of crowbarred in there, and you wouldn't know it unless you actually looked at the cast listing. And I'm not quite sure where they were going with that. It was almost like they had to kind of doff their cap in that direction, but couldn't really incorporate it as part of the story. So they just sort of stick him in there next to this guy with this ridiculous fake beard. But where are you coming from with all of this in terms of what they put in or left out that you found a bit problematic, or at least you would have preferred it if they'd done it a different way?
I would actually say that, I obviously, being somewhat obsessed with the P-Tech angle, I of course wanted, I kept waiting for them to maybe mention P-Tech at some point, because it to me seems like a real smoking gun, or that there's a real thread to that whole story. I was also kind of disappointed that they didn't get into like anything with Alex Station. And this is actually, my nitpicking of the movie is that they sort of, shy away from any of those things like Alex Station or P-Tech, even where there are names. We know who these people are. We know the guys that ran P-Tech. We know that they were getting, funding from a bin Laden intermediary, Yasin al-Qadi. The same with Alex Station. We know who all these people are. Whereas in the film, it's very much the narrative of this sort of amorphous deep state organization where, Aaron Delgado, and we see a few people like Robbie said, Cheney. And that was probably, just an aside, my favorite line in the movie is, what's up with Dick, when he's losing his shit. But for the most part, it's sort of, these people could be anybody. They don't really, they represent more like archetypes for the conspiracy culture. It's interesting, I like that they put in, the CIA spooks and this, CEO from this, arms aerospace company playing golf. Yeah, that probably did happen. or something like that. But what bothered me was that they don't that they didn't pick up on things, say, like Alex Station, where, as you've been talking about, Tom, on your show, I mean, they really, you know, if you just look into that, you can see exactly how this operation was being run to a large degree. And it, you know, it doesn't need to be this, the groups of shadowy people that we'll never really know and we'll never. And I think it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy with a lot of 9/11 truthers, is that they're so obsessed with solving the crime or explaining how the crime took place, but they don't want to look into avenues where, okay, maybe we're never going to get the, you know, the head of the council and put him on trial, but we could put a bunch of people in Alex Station on trial for, you know, tons of fraud and all sorts of illegal things that were going on. So that kind of bothered me, along with, as you were saying, the Bin Laden scene and the whole angle of Bin Laden in the film as just sort of a, he's a CIA asset, but he's kind of like a dickhead. And, but he, you know, essentially the way the movie portrays him, he just is sort of, he's just the face. And I think Bin Laden was the face, you know, he was the front for Al-Qaeda and these things to commit 9/11. But, you know, I think I kind of didn't like that he was so marginalized, because I don't quite think that's the case. And the same goes for all the hijackers in the movie, for the most part, are portrayed as being military intelligence or some sort of intelligence, you know, that they were officially intelligence officers, either in the military or the CIA. And, you know, and they'd all work great as patsies. I think that's an interesting idea, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's some degree of truth to that, but maybe we'll learn later. But if that were the case, if that's the case that they're putting forward, I think it's just kind of stupid, because there's no way that you could, you know, that you wouldn't figure out that the 19 hijackers were all part of military intelligence. That's just bogus, you know? I mean, there's no, like...
Well, that's what these guys claim, though.
You can't get away with it.
These guys actually do. I mean, a lot of the truth community for a while thought that they had figured that out, and they all were. I mean, that's, I think that's where that comes from. As they,
certainly. Yeah. I think it's stupid, just because, you know, anytime there is a terrorist act or any sort of act of violence, if the guy worked in the military, we'll find out about it. You know, nobody denies that Timothy McVeigh was in the military and, you know, was in an elite sort of specialized unit. That's why the whole, you know, this, the idea that McVeigh might have been part of something larger, you know, happened. But 19, first off, I don't know, maybe this was just me at the time, but I would have, you know, it wasn't like there were a ton of, you know, young Muslim men joining up the U.S. military, you know, in 1999 or whenever they're supposed to have been there. So it'd just be crazy if, you know, 19 of them all were, you know, named as the, I don't know, that to me is kind of silly. You wouldn't want to recruit directly from military intelligence, because you would have too many people talking. Whereas if you're recruiting from a more sort of, you know, amorphous or nebulous group of disgruntled Muslim guys from varying backgrounds, some of which, you know, maybe fought in Afghanistan or other places, I mean, that to me makes a bit more sense. Then let's just go down the roster and pick out the best Muslim military intelligence operatives that we have and make them be patsies.
Yeah. Well, just to clarify a couple of things here. I totally agree with you that the biggest thing for me that was missing from the film was Rich Blee, Tom Wilshire, Alex Station, that whole story, because that for me is the 9/11 case, or at least the one that's there to be made. This was kind of the problem, that they focused on what was going on down in Florida, where it does appear some of these guys were for a time staying on a military base. Daniel Hopsicker seems to have established that pretty conclusively. But like you're saying, I mean, none of these people were in the US before, February 2000?
Yeah.
So what? They all came into the US in the same 18-month period, all signed up to the military, instantly got transported into military intelligence and recruited for the 9/11 operation. That didn't happen. So, yeah, but because they focused on Mohammed Atta and that lot, but they avoided Al-Midar and the whole Alex Station fiasco, which to my mind is the more important part of that story. So that's a bit of a failing. But just to go back to what you were saying about P-TECH, just explain for people what the particular relevance of P-TECH is. Because for me, it was always about this may have been part of the reason why the military failure, so-called failure to respond on the morning of 9/11, was so pathetic. I mean, there are people have suggested other elements to this, like, you know, that this software may have even been part of why information wasn't shared between agencies and so on. But that always struck me as a human thing, that there were people making the decision not to share information rather than that someone had hacked in and, you know, stopped emails getting through or something. So it was primarily about the question of the military failure on the morning of 9/11 itself. That's the P-TECH thing, isn't it?
So P-TECH is I think it still exists, although it's changed its name, but it was a Boston-based tech company that was, I can't remember the two guys who founded it, but they founded it alongside Yasin al-Qadi, who was the chief investor in P-TECH, and who is without a doubt bin Laden's, one of his primary financiers. And there's no denying this. This is, you know, out in the open. He was on a UN watch list until very recently, and a bunch of other US watch lists and things like that. And now it appears that he had, you know, from time to time hangs out in Turkey with Erdogan's son. But P-TECH was an enterprise architecture company, so they designed enterprise architecture for large scale businesses and institutions. So I don't know, you know, I'm not like an expert on it, but essentially what it is, if you're, say, JP Morgan Chase, who was who had bought P-TECH software, you would use it, and you would essentially be able to sort of have a complete overview of the entire operation of Chase. And you could see when things would start to get risky. You could see if people were doing things illegally. You could see if quotas weren't up, and it's like a
God view piece of software.
Yeah, kind of. That's right. And you can do quite a lot with P-TECH. Now, that in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing, but P-TECH was somehow able to endear itself to everybody. You know, the DOD, the White House, the Secret Service, I believe FEMA, definitely the FAA, the CIA. All sorts of other government organizations, the IRS, also things like Chase, and you know, there was a whistleblower, Indira Singh, who's a bit nutty, but I do buy at least, you know, her. She sort of blew the whistle on much of P-TECH, and the connection between Yasin al-Qadi and P-TECH. But basically, on the day of 9/11, P-TECH's enterprise architecture software was being run in all of these different institutions. And like you said, Tom, there's an idea that maybe this was used to, stop the flow of information on 9/11. I kind of wondered, a theory I'd sort of floated around in my head the past couple of days preparing for this was, you know, maybe that wasn't the case. And maybe it really was just a matter of being able to, you know, like you said, have a God view of the whole operation to make sure that everything was more or less sort of running the way they wanted it to. But even if P-TECH, you know, if it was in place, but they didn't use it on 9/11, the mere fact that this small, very obscure software company with direct backing from a known terrorist financer, plus lots of other shady Saudi money that was being dumped into it, how this guy was able to sell this to the White House, the FAA, the CIA, the DOD, IRS, Secret Service, all these things, that in and of itself is very odd and suspicious. And that goes a little bit beyond, we're both members of Skull and Bone, so I'm going to give you a military contract in Afghanistan. That's a little bit different with P-TECH. There's something more that this guy was able to basically employ this software. And who knows what sort of back doors they put into it, that maybe Yasin al-Qadi was overseeing things from God only knows where on 9/11. And again, too, P-TECH was raided by the FBI. There were investigations and they sort of fizzled out and nothing really came of them. So there is a story there. To me, that's just one of I think P-TECH is relevant, if for nothing else, then this software was in place on 9/11. Someone could have manipulated things with the software so that perhaps information wasn't flowing to one another, B, they were able to oversee the whole operation and see what was going on. You know, or if for no other reason, it's just, how did Yasin al-Qadi sell this? And how, you know, that is a connection that you can't really just shake off as a mere coincidence, or, oh, what a strange, you know, happenstance that
it's not just some
using
quirky detail of part of this story. I mean, like you say, this guy is directly connected to bin Laden, who is the guy who supposedly masterminded these attacks. So, but to get back to the film, rather than to get too overwhelmingly sidelined on BTEC, I think people can certainly, you've told them enough that they can go and find out more about that if they're interested. There is also a bunch of conspiracy bait stuck in there, like Bohemian Grove and the cremation of care ceremony. That,
oh yeah,
I don't really see what the hell that's got to do with 9/11, to be honest. And this kind of symbolizes my overall problem with the film, is that for the most part, it appeals to people who are already into this sort of material, and it hits a lot of buttons, it hits a lot of beats that they're familiar with. It does very little to convince your skeptic or your floating voter, if you like, on the 9/11 issue. Robbie, do you agree with this assessment or not? And I mean, feel free to disagree with me if you felt... Oh, okay then.
No. I mean, I completely agree with you. There's absolutely nothing in it. At least JFK tries to build a case and shows you from the perspective of District Attorney Jim Garrison, you know, trying to build this case from scratch. This movie is basically showing you the nuts and bolts of how 9/11 was an inside job, with no attempt made to even the way that it starts, landing you in this, you know, Council on Foreign Affairs PNAC guy's office, bringing in a CIA agent, asking him to do another 93 World Trade Center bombing to start a new, you know, basically a new American century. He's using quotes from the PNAC Rebuilding America's Defenses document. Pretty cartoonish right off the bat. It's not, doesn't even seem like it's making any attempt to bring in a casual, you know, a casual audience member. It's only made for people who are already partly familiar with some of this stuff and who already believe it. I don't think that it was even remotely the filmmaker's intention to try to convince people. If it was, then it failed, obviously, on that level. But I thought that I just wanted to briefly mention that when you guys were saying that you wish there was more stuff about Alex Station, Rich Blee, some of these other characters you were hoping they would make an appearance, I think that you've actually hit on something that is a fundamental problem within the entire 9/11 truth movement. Is, I'll pose the question to you guys, how often have you seen a truther or a truther contingent or a group connect things like the buildings being blown up, the planes not maybe being piloted by humans, with some of the more Alex Station stuff about how there were actual specific people in the CIA and FBI who, you know, dropped the ball in ways that almost seem like deliberate obstruction of justice or attempts to actually, you know, make sure that people didn't find out information. There's never really, I mean, as far as my time in the 9/11 truth movement, books like Disconnecting the Dots and the stuff that Ray Novoselsky has done about Rich Blee, 9/11 Press for Truth, all that stuff has almost been in a completely different camp of truthers, you know, and in the past they would have been called Lee Hoppers. Oh, you're just a Lee Hopper. But I think that's really is a glaring, giant, weak spot in the whole movement, is that no one's actually made an effort to try to connect those two worlds together and be like, look, both of these things could be true, but it can't be only one or the other. You know, you can't act like all the hijackers are all military intelligence simply recruited by some kind of rogue agency when you have all this other information out there that's more factual. It's backed up by more evidence showing that indeed there's a much more complicated than that. And it actually will, if you try to unpack that in a movie, it's going to actually basically run into your other narratives and contradict them. So I think that that's why they deliberately omitted them. It's for the same reason the 9/11 truth movement as a whole also deliberately pushes that stuff to just another realm of like, well, maybe that stuff is true, but if it is, and that means that the hijackers were real, and we've already been committed this whole time to saying that the hijackers were fake. You know, I mean, even people like Kevin Barrett and other morons like that for years were saying that the hijackers actually never even existed, that they were just simply fake, you know, which really put people in a difficult, you know, it's like, how can you really move forward when you're getting more information about the hijackers later down the road with that narrative? You're already committed to a narrative so ridiculous. That's part of the problem, I think. And we're seeing it in the movie itself, on various levels. I mean,
I'm totally with you there. This was always my problem, with the, not so much with the 9/11 thing, but certainly with the 7/7 London bombings truth movement, that they were so focused on the day itself. It was all about the planes and the buildings on 9/11, and it was all about, you know, the trains and the bombs on 7/7. And the question of, well, who were these guys that they're saying were responsible, and what was known about them? What was done about them? Who were they moving around with? Where were they? What were they actually up to? And what does that look like? I know it's a much more painstaking and difficult thing to try and understand, but this fixation on the events of the day itself, and therefore, of course, the media coverage of the events of the day itself, it trapped people into a place where, because you're spending so much time basically just rewatching the same YouTube clips over and over and recut in different videos and so on, that sooner or later you just start feeling, well, is any of this actually real? And that's when you start getting all of these accusations about, oh, well, you know, these people never existed. Oh, the planes were fake. The World Trade Center was CGI. I mean, how can a movement that's genuinely interested in trying to demonstrate that, and they kind of already made up their mind for the most part, but okay, they're trying to demonstrate that the government somehow did this, or people in the government somehow did this, and they ended up in a place where they were arguing that CGI planes hit CGI towers and that there weren't any hijackers and that none of that matters, when that's actually the thing that leads you back to the government, is what did the government know about these guys? What relationship did they have with them? And the film reflects that perfectly and beautifully and as well, you know, as well as it possibly could do, because it leaves out almost all of the important stuff in that sort of whole half of the story. But you're right, no one's really attempted to kind of marry those two worlds together, and at this point, it's not going to happen. But you see why this tendency has now got to where the kind of false flag movement is at, where it's all, oh, everything's fake. Everything, you know, all of this media coverage is, you know, CGI or Photoshop, or those people weren't really there, or those people aren't really dead, or it's because the tolerance for a longer narrative and a more careful analysis has just waned away to almost nothing.
I think there's also a... Oh, no, sorry, Tom, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I've bitched about this before, so I'll shut up.
It's something that kind of came to my mind there when you and Robbie were talking about marrying these two groups. And you're so spot on, Robbie, that, you know, there is no... You're either sort of obsessed with the planes, or how did Building 7 fall down? And, you know, that becomes the entire focus, not on the what was going on at Alex Station. Who were these 19 hijackers? You know, what's the real deal with Muhammad Atta and all of that? And I think there's I find that it's also because if you really start going down into who are these people? What are their real connections? Suddenly, some of the good guys, in air quotes, that the buildings and planes people have sort of, you know, looked to, suddenly don't feel like such good guys. You know, like everybody, in spite of the, you know, oh, it's the government, you know, Anthony Schaefer is a saint. You know, everything he says is wonderful. There are all of these other military esque people that are sort of, you know, they're the real truth tellers. And I think, you know, I'm sort of generalizing, but there is a, you know, I'd say a quite strong majority of people in the 9/11 truth community that do, you know, lean more sort of on the, you know, pro-military side of things. And, you know, when you start sort of diving into the nitty-gritty of who are these people that were sort of orchestrating this and stuff, and you start to see that, like, everybody is so guilty. And suddenly you don't have a nice sort of clean cut there is a good guy, there is a bad guy, this is what happened. And I think that's sort of like a failing with a lot of people that want to, you know, look deeper into conspiracies and things like that. They always sort of have to pick and choose an enemy and, you know, and a hero. And with the, you know, planes or holograms and all that stuff, I mean, you know, that's sort of it. Even though the some of the ideas that are put forth in Operation Terror are so ludicrous, they're also and overly difficult to accomplish, you know, and the whole holograms thing is, I mean, how in the fuck could you actually pull that off? You know, it's so complicated, but at the same time, it's very simple. You know, there were no hijackers, there were no people on the planes, there weren't any planes. It's very simple and sort of that's it, and you know who the bad guys are. Whereas if you dive deeper into the different operatives and what did the government know? Why were they allowing these guys to move freely? Why were they stopping certain bits and pieces of information flowing? You know, it's more difficult. You actually have to put a bit more work into it. And I think you also start to see that even some of the sacred cows that you might, you know, that some people sort of built up, they're complicit in all of this as well. And that doesn't really work out. Whereas a simple, clean, you know, this is it. Able Danger would have saved us all, which is I want that chart in my room too. you know, the idea that like this is it, right? You know, this chart, you know, like that's a smoking gun to them. That chart, yeah. That we barely even really get to see. You know, and it's got all these different terrorists and lines and things and pointing to other things. But it's sort of like that's it. If only we had the chart that the CIA stole from Able Danger, then we would know we would be able to solve this whole thing. You know, it doesn't really work like that.
I just want to interject really quick on that whole Anthony Schaefer thing. That whole era of 9/11 truth is very strange in retrospect, because I don't know if you remember, but there was like a Fox News business channel, little clique of people who were heavily promoting Able Danger when it first broke, which included Judge Napolitano and Lou Dobbs, kind of gained popularity in the 9/11 truth movement over that incident. And then Kurt Weldon, I think, was like championing that, like on the House floor. Like he tried to bring that into prominence. And now Anthony Schaefer is just a very middle of the road, right, generic right wing pundit on Fox News who never talks about 9/11 anymore. It's funny how that worked out. It's almost like he was trying to launch his own career. So I don't know much about how, you know, what role Able Danger actually played. I'm suspicious of its importance, much more so now than I used to be. God, I forgot. I was going to say something else you brought up. God, I can't remember now. Sorry.
Well, just on a quick aside, but on Fox News too, I mean, they were the ones that pushed the dancing Israelis too. I forget, Britt Hume, who did this long expose about the, you know, the Israeli students and all of that stuff. So, you know, interesting too. And now, of course, I mean, you'd never hear Fox News talk about, you know, dancing Israelis or anything about 9/11, or even the notion that perhaps there were other, if not the Israelis, other intelligence organizations involved in this. So, you know, I think Fox News played a very important role in, obviously, in a lot of the sort of early stages of pushing all sorts of strands about 9/11, both mainstream and alternative theories.
Geraldo pushed Building 7 conspiracies on his like 4 or 5 years ago. So, yeah, there's some weirdness with Fox News.
Well, I mean, we should probably try and get back to the film somewhat. I mean, do either of you have anything that you want to add, or should we just get up to the day of 9/11 itself? Because there's a lot of other stuff we could get into, but I think we've mostly covered it.
Like in the timeline in the movie leading up to the day of, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I just want to say I hate the character Poole, who's that's actually the director, Paul Cross.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and I mean every time he said "pretty princess," I wanted to just barf all over my computer, and I found him so I was like glad he died. you know, I didn't want him to make it, and that is such a weird. Like, again, who's the good guy? Some shady military contractor, you know, like that's our hero. Yeah, like a Raytheon employee, that's our hero. Some strange messages, and again, the we're picking and choosing who our heroes are, and who the villains are, and that's sort of it. And we can't, you know, don't don't look any closer. Cause I mean, come on, Raytheon, you know, like, could you imagine some, and you know, and they portray him in the movie. I mean, he's obviously worked with the CIA before, you know, and, you know, it's like, this is a bridge too far, killing Americans, but obviously building all sorts of, you know, murdering, you know, flying fortresses to kill Afghans. That's okay with Poole. But, you know, oh, you know, pretty princess, and, you know, we can't, I just fucking hated him, but I'll stop there.
That talent show plot was God. So intensely cringeworthy. I couldn't believe it. But I just wanted to clarify, just to give the filmmakers some credit, they're not actually, and I think we might have confused listeners by not clarifying that they're not actually saying that the planes were holograms in the movie. They're basically saying that the planes were replaced with look-alike drones in it. But the more that we're talking about this, I do think that Pilots for 9/11 Truth had a bigger influence over the film than almost any other sect of the 9/11 movement, because there was actually surprisingly little nuts and bolts about how the buildings were blown up in the movie. I mean, that's one of the things I was actually hoping they would do more detail on. There was a very short scene where that, like, he's like a Texas demolition guy or something. He's like,
who worked on the PC?
Yeah. He was like, yeah, we're going to use thermite. And they're like, you mean that stuff that just melts? Like, that's not going to blow up building. And he's like, I'm talking about itty bitty thermite. And then, he shows how the little wireless demolition charge will go across the column. And that's it. Like, they don't, they spend maybe 5 minutes total in the whole movie showing how that was done. And they spend, if you really think about it, they spend the majority of the movie, the technical aspects, talking about the plane replacements, mm-hmm. which is kind of an odd area to spend that much time when there's so many other facets of 9/11. So I was disappointed in that. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, the buildings can almost take up an entire movie if you really want to go into that storyline. Mm. So I'm trying to think of what else in the movie leading up to the day of 9/11 was interesting. Oh, I actually thought one of the most well done funny scenes in it wasn't what the first Bin Laden scene was terrible. It was cartoonish. That fake beard looked abominable. But the second Bin Laden scene where they're just talking about him, I think it was in Dubai, talking about how he needs to get dialysis treatment.
Yes.
And they're talking, I thought that was actually hilarious. And that was pretty, it was funny because it was like, if I was trying to imagine in my own mind how that played out, if that incident's really true, it actually was verified by multiple mainstream reporters out in Europe. I think one of them for La Figaro and another one for another paper verified that a CIA liaison did visit Bin Laden in the hospital. So if you're going to imagine in your mind how that situation would play out, I feel like the writer actually did a decent, halfway decent job of trying to imagine how that played out. The cartoonish aspect, of course, was the guy saying, like, we need to keep Bin Laden alive for another goddamn 8 months. Like,
to get that,
which is pretty funny. I mean, it was funny. Because how are you going to, you know, how are you going to write out that situation any better than that? Especially if you've already written yourself into a corner with Delgado being, like, in charge of everything, including making sure Bin Laden stays alive, you know, and long enough for 9/11.
I also loved that the Bin Laden's lackey and the CIA lackey were both, you know, Longhorn fans and went to the same college in Texas. It was just like a funny little, you know, just ridiculous joke, but maybe true. I have no idea. But I thought that was just like a fun, weird little, again, sort of along the lines of, you know, what would it be like when a CIA guy meets with, you know, Ali Muhammad or something like that? Maybe they'd have a lot more in common than you would think.
The strip club scene was also, I thought it was a fun inclusion, even though there's so much more of that, you know, the floor of the story to unpack, but I thought that was cute that they put that in there. But I mean, there's just so many other things. Like when I was watching it, I couldn't help but think of all the things that I would want to see in a movie like this. But then the more I thought about it, it would be impossible. You would almost have to make it like a 12-part miniseries to really show everything. And then even if you do that, let's say if you avoided all the really ridiculous, more over the top conspiracy stuff that you can't prove and only included the provable stuff, it would still seem like an incoherent, surreal, nonsensical narrative. Even if you just literally put in like every facet of the real story that we know, And I'm not even talking about the 9/11 Commission report. I'm just talking about all the reported incidents that we know, you know, Alex Station, everything combined. You tried to combine that together into a singular narrative, even in a miniseries, and it still would not make sense. And that's one of my main takeaways from this is either way, you combine all the conspiracy lore stuff together into a narrative, it doesn't make sense and seems cartoonish. But if you do the same thing to the real stuff, quote unquote, real stuff, it would also seem cartoonish and nonsensical for different reasons. So I thought that was very interesting to come to that conclusion that it's kind of like you really couldn't do this. And any way you do it, it would still seem odd and not like a coherent narrative that holds water. That, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Yeah. I doubt we should even try, to be honest, at this point. But okay, let's get into the actual portrayal of the day of 9/11 itself. Because they totally fucked up the timeline. Events happen in the wrong order. They happen at the wrong times. There's some really... I don't even know why they did it like this. I don't know why they messed around with it. Because the sort of basic timeline and order of events is very well established and not really open to that much debate. So was this just basic factual error? Were they reflecting the 9/11 movement's tendency towards sometimes basic factual errors?
There's a reference to the TSA.
What is the reference?
When I think it's when Poole is going through, airport security, in the background you can hear in a loudspeaker, blah blah, please go to TSA for this. I mean, TSA didn't even exist.
No.
Oh, wow.
So, man, I mean, that was just like, I don't know what. And that, I think, again, is just the politics of Art Olivier, coming to the forefront there. But that was just a stupid. I mean, it didn't exist. I don't know why he put that in there. I don't know. There was airport security wasn't as crazy as it is now. Back in when 9/11 was committed. But so, yeah, that was just like a weird, timelines and things like that. That, as you said, Tom, it almost like all that sort of stuff just sort of went right out the window when they got to the day of.
Mm. Robbie, how did you respond to the day of 9/11 in Operation Terror?
I actually thought it was pretty hilarious. It was also, some of it was great. Some of it wasn't. I'll just jump to the autoclave because that's,
yes.
I mean, it's got to be one of the greatest scenes in arguably in movie history.
Yep. Yep.
And actually the prop or whatever they used for the autoclave images actually was more convincing than some of the plane inserts they had earlier. So that was fucking hilarious.
Would you explain that for people who haven't seen the film?
So if you're familiar with 9/11 conspiracy stuff, one of the biggest hiccups in trying to explain what actually happened, if it didn't happen as the government said it did, is what happened to all the people on the planes. Because one of the things is the planes were drones, and for some reason, there's really no theories about drone commercial airliners still having the people in them and crashing into the towers because apparently, and this is the thing that falls apart when you try to explain this narrative at all, even apart from this movie, is it depends on this idea that somehow there was a simulated hijacking drill happening in the real planes that were then landed and that the people in them must have been killed or disposed of in some way, while the drone planes were flying into the towers that were switched midair with no one in them into the towers. Mm. So that, as far as I understand, that seems to be sort of the going theory. So this movie tries to portray that where they're switched out midair, and cleverly, the writer actually does something clever where he puts all of the people who worked on the drone mechanics on the same plane together. This is actually where I got a little bit lost in the movie because I couldn't keep track of the four planes. I didn't understand.
Yes, me neither.
I got really lost. So maybe you guys can help explain that. But basically, they unload everybody off the plane, and everybody just basically walks off the plane like lambs to a slaughter with all these guys in glasses. They look like Blackwater security guys with like AK-47 just standing around them, walking them into an airplane hangar. And they're like, we've gotten reports there's been a major terrorist attack, so we all need you to walk into a bomb shelter. Yeah. And the bomb shelter is a giant NASA oven. Apparently,
yeah, it's an NASA Holocaust oven, basically.
yes, designed to destroy airplane parts, like with a high temperature. Which, again, I'm going to argue. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I would wager that that also comes from pilots for 9/11 Truth. It was such an obscure tidbit from the movement. I actually never heard that theory about an autoclave. You know, I don't think most people have actually gotten far enough in the Truth movement to be like, well, here's how they killed the passengers. Once I got the plane, they lined them all up and they shot them in the back of the head. I mean, and then I guess the other, you know, if you want to peel it back even before that, it's the voice morphing thing, which is also to me a big hiccup in the 9/11 conspiracy narrative, which to me doesn't hold water. And that's how you need to get to the point where it's like, well, these people weren't actually calling any of their relatives. They were actually being killed in an autoclave, you know, while a guy in an office under the direction of Michael Goldberg was talking to a voice morpher, pretending to be one by one each one of these person's relatives, which is absurd. But that's kind of, unfortunately, it's kind of a requirement for all these other little threads in this 9/11 conspiracy narrative to hold up. Without that, a lot of it falls apart, because I think that 9/11 truthers intuitively know that even if you throw out the 9/11 commission report, in my mind, the quote unquote official story, the one that people really remember and that resonates with them, are those phone calls. That is, to me, the quote unquote official story. That's all that was needed in the public narrative, the public mind, to propel everything about 9/11. I don't even think you really needed anything else. I mean, in terms of the narrative to stick. So
in terms of it crucial. To have that kind of emotional hook with people, so that you know that makes them believe it and don't want to let go of it. Yeah.
And it's almost Hollywood-esque. I'm not saying that it was fake or a stage. It was Hollywood-esque in the way that it transpired.
Almost everything about 9/11 was Hollywood-esque.
Yes, correct.
I'm actually sort of along Robbie's lines of confusion with the not only just the planes and you know, if they did have drones, and the drones are the ones that actually went to the, I mean, why not just crash the other planes anyway? You know, I mean, just have,
oh, because they
planes.
Have to get into the whole question of, you know, you can't do that because that means that you have to have the equipment attached on the outside of the plane, because that's what it looks like in like three photographs, that there might be something stuck on the plane. So you've got to incorporate that part of the narrative, which means they weren't the same planes. They can't be the same planes. So, like Robbie says, that means what happens to passengers.
Why not have just had six plane crashes, or you know what I mean, like, or seven plane crashes?
Oh, you mean
instead of like, yeah, okay, let's say you have the drones, right? And the drones are the ones that actually go into the two towers and the Pentagon, and then one goes down in Shanksville. Okay, so you have those four planes, but why not just crash another four planes? Just to make it even more spectacular. You know, make another plane hit the World Trade. I mean, as opposed to, okay, we're going to screen all of these people in public in the airport, where anybody can see what's going on. Okay. And then we're going to confiscate their cell phones in front of everybody, which would never happen. You know, I doubt, maybe I'm speaking more in 2017, but if that happened in an airport, I guarantee people would be like, oh, forget it, I'm not flying then. Like, if I can't have my phone on me. But anyway, that aside, they screen all these people, then put them on the plane. And that was also, again, Robbie, one of my favorite lines, when Poole is like, huh, isn't this odd? Everybody that worked on this operation is in the same plane. And that, you know, the fat Raytheon guy is like, eh, I wouldn't worry about it. You know, no biggie. Like, yeah, whatever. And then they land, and then they put them in a NASA oven to kill them. I mean, why? First off, they still didn't get rid of those planes. Why not just crash four more planes? You know, case closed. And I think that just sort of goes to the whole, why even bother? If you're going to kill 3,000 people, what's a couple planes worth of, you know, why not just kill those people as well? Yeah. Second question, where in the storyline are the 19 hijackers? Are they just taken and killed somewhere? And, you know, then
we left them in the strip club. They're not really seen after that, as I remember.
Do they just disappear? I mean, because
I think they're still in the strip club.
Maybe it's on the cutting room floor. But I was actually waiting for Delgado or someone to just like go to ground zero and drop a passport on the ground all.
Yeah.
You know, but no, that didn't happen. So, you know, you're right. They don't follow up at all about what happens with them. It's very briefly mentioned and just sort of brushed under the rug in the narrative.
So there are, let's face it, some pretty big holes in this. Aside from the NASA Holocaust stuff, and my favorite moment of the 9/11 sequence itself is when they blow up the World Trade Center.
Adios, muchachos.
I mean, surely that was supposed to be funny.
He doesn't even look at it. He walks away as he blows it up.
He sort of pushes the button and then just walks, stomps off.
Yeah. I'm sure it went down.
I mean, some moments in this film, you can't really tell, are they trying to be funny? But surely that moment, that's supposed to be comical, isn't it? Pierce? I
guess so. I don't know.
That's why I kept going back to like David Mamet when I was thinking about it, because some of the stuff in some of his movies it's funny, but it's also not, it doesn't seem like it's overtly funny, but it's just like really snappy, weird dialogue. And you know, I mean, I'll laugh during points of JFK that I don't know if they're supposed to be funny, but they're fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the stuff with Joe Pesci and, you know, collaborating with Clay Shaw.
Oh, yeah.
Where Clay Shaw gets like a boner and stuff. I mean, the whole thing is just
Kevin Bacon dressed as Marie Antoinette. Yeah.
It's fucking great. And it's hilarious. So I don't know if that was maybe an influence of this guy. Maybe we're giving him too much credit. But I mean, if you don't mind, I just want to jump forward to one of my favorite lines in the whole movie, where I think it was Delgado is watching. He's like from the command center watching TV, and he hears Dan Rather talking about the buildings coming down, and he's like, "Will somebody please tell Dan Rather to shut the fuck up?
Yeah.
Don't let CBS replay that clip. Jesus Christ, a member of the Council on Foreign Affairs telling the world that it looks like Building 7 has been deliberately destroyed. Unfucking believable." I thought that to me seemed like it was straight out of a David Mamet script.
Yeah, there is a touch of like Wag the Dog or something in there. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I like that element too. Of even though they sort of do it a little, like, you know, they kind of push it too hard at times, but pointing out some of the absurdities of, you know, like there's a line, isn't that a bit obvious? Using a former business partner of the Bush family as our head terrorist, and you know, it's they're obviously sort of, you know, saying being overly deliberate with that. But, you know, it is kind of like, huh, like, and there's a bunch of moments throughout the film like that where, you know, they're like, oh, come on, nobody would believe that this would happen, or, you know, you can't do that. You can fool all this. Sort of, you know, they're sort of like overdone. But at the same time, it is like an interesting critique of like, oh, I guess you can have a former partner of the Bush family as the head terrorist and do a bunch of, you know, you know, have a plane disappear in Pennsylvania and be like, no, it crashed. I mean, there's nothing left, and, you know, there's a bunch of moments where we've said that we shot something down, but we never really did that, you know. I like that idea in the movie, was a positive, is the I can convince the public of anything, you know, like, just don't worry. Like when Delgado is kind of just losing his shit when literally every part of the operation fails for him, you know, and Goldberg is just stop, you know, calm down. All right. Was this the first time, you know, at the dance? Like, it's going to be okay. Like, I can spin this to however we want. Don't worry.
That was one of the best parts actually for me, was when the 93 was supposed to, like, they were going to blow up a bomb on the ground at the same time the plane fell from the sky. Yeah. And he's like, fuck. He's like, who the hell blew that up first? And then Goldberg's like, well, we'll just tell him the plane went under the ground. And he's like,
yeah.
I thought that was pretty great.
I honestly don't know what to ask. Yeah, this film gets quite absurd, to be honest. The longer it goes on, the funnier it gets. It's kind of, in some ways, it's absolutely fantastic to watch. It is really quite entertaining, but how intentional any of that is, I leave it to everyone else to watch it and judge for themselves, I guess. But ultimately, my question that I wanted to pose to you is this film just fan service for the 9/11 truth movement? And like you were saying, Robbie, in particular for the kind of pilots for 9/11 truth, part of that movement. And for those listening who aren't familiar with the term fan service, it's something that's applied to a lot of modern Hollywood films, where they remake and reboot things and they create cinematic universes and so on. And it's all about creating a familiar impression so that the audience will go back to feel that same thing again. So you just keep showing them the same things over and over again, the same locations, characters, vehicles, whatever. It's particularly been leveled at the rebooted Star Wars franchise. But this film was 5 years ago, so it may have actually been ahead of its time in terms of filmmaking. But is that a fair summary or not? Is it just fan service for 9/11 truthers, or is it a bit more than that? Robbie?
I mean, I think it's both. I don't think you're going to be able to find many people who would want to watch this. Especially if they'd seen the trailer and seen how low budget it was, if they weren't already somewhat invested in the 9/11 truth movement. But that being said, I think that the filmmakers worked really hard to fill it with, jam pack it with information and technical details that's, to me, seem more thoughtful than just someone, just say like a filmmaker who was interested in 9/11 conspiracies and wanted to make a movie about it. This definitely seems like you can tell that it had a lot of thought and time put into it. And it was made by someone who was very dedicated to some of these narratives in the 9/11 truth movement. So I know that the filmmaker has credits before this, but to me it's fan service, but it's also like, also trying to maybe inform truthers more in its own naive way, perhaps, and trying to get them to flesh out some of their own theories. But it also reveals, I think it inadvertently reveals, and maybe the filmmakers realize this afterwards, it reveals some of the glaring holes in some of those narratives and how they basically require them to be filled in with completely unbelievable pieces of the narrative to hold up. Like I'll bring up the voice morphing again, like that. So it's a mostly fan service. But I think, and again, I guess I'll just mention that I really do think it would be impossible to make any coherent narrative about 9/11 without, you pretty much have to omit things to make these narratives work. I mean, United 93 is a good example of how the narrative works, I guess, in that movie, because they omit a lot of things and only focus on a very narrow aspect of 9/11. So this is very ambitious that they tried to focus on so much of it and show you so much. But I still think the only way it could be properly done is in like a miniseries. But then again, you'd run into other problems where it still might not make a whole lot of sense. It might actually make even less sense and be a less compelling narrative, so to speak, to just watch as like a, an audience member. But it'd also be, I think it'd be interesting because it might be more surreal and more like if you took JFK and made it like 10 times stranger and more confusing. That could actually be interesting. It could almost be like a David Lynch, Oliver Stone hybrid or something. So,
Pierce, just in summing up, how did you feel about, this question of fan service and the overall achievements and ambitions and failings of the movie?
I sort of agree with Robbie. I think it's a bit of both, because if you watch like interviews with Art Olivier, he is very well spoken, and he is very sincere in what he wants to talk about. And just as an aside, he also was the vice presidential candidate on the Libertarian Party in 2000 alongside Harry Brown. He's not like a nobody. He's a smart guy. He's accomplished, and he's thoughtful. And you can tell that obviously a lot of that comes through in the movie, in that it does include lots of really interesting tidbits and angles and threads to look into. I mean, they really do mention everything in this movie. There's mention to put options on the airlines and stuff, which is always an overlooked, I think, avenue with 9/11. They talk about Enron. There's even I think it's Dick Cheney name drops Central Asia as something that's important and to look out for. So there's, like I said earlier, they're very well versed in conspiracy culture and in 9/11, and that comes across. But at the same time, there's no way you could convince the man on the street to watch Operation Terror and, be convinced that there's, I'm sure they might be like, there's some weird questions that they might have and stuff, but it is definitely aimed, I think, at the converted, they're not going to sort of, I think it is fan service, essentially. It's sort of like fan service also, which is also an anime term. Thought I'd drop that in, but it is fan service in that it caters to the conspiracy crowd to begin with. And it sort of like acts as a, like, let's, this is like everything in one movie. So we've got FEMA and the CFR, Bohemian Grove, coke and strippers, put options, $2.3 trillion missing. It just sort of puts everything in one easily condensable, easily swallowable pill, which I think is super fan service to conspiracy culture, who loves that. They love having watch this 10-minute video on YouTube and you'll be convinced that, nobody died at Sandy Hook or something. They love the condensed fan servicey things to begin with. So I think it is a bit of both. And it's kind of like a shame because I think there are some really interesting ideas and interesting angles that are explored in Operation Terror, or that could be explored in another attempt at making a 9/11 conspiracy thriller. I think, like you were saying, Robbie, I think it would be difficult. You'd have to really kind of, I think the movie is too grand in its scope, whereas they should have really focused on like one, you could make a low budget movie. If you had actually good actors, you could make a very good low budget thriller of Alex Station. Cause really all you'd need is like an office, with cubicles or something.
Bunch of
Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And yeah, right. You cast Bukowski and some other people. And if the writing is good and the actors are actually good, then you can make a really, you can make a very compelling story. Almost like something like Homeland, where it wouldn't cost that much because you're basically just shooting in some, dark office in the CIA's, cavernous building. And yeah. You could actually do that, whereas Operation Terror kind of tries to take on everything. The same way I think if you got good actors and a good script, you can make a very compelling story about whatever was going on in Florida. And that would be fairly contained. You'd have to get in some small planes for some shots. But the same thing. I mean, that's just a bunch of guys kind of hanging around in Florida. It wouldn't be that difficult. This movie, I think, is it's ambitious that they tried to take on everything, but it's also sort of like part of their downfall. And I think it's very indicative of the 9/11 truth community that always loves to, rather than, explore in detail particular, one particular avenue, it's got to be like, here's everything all at once. And I'm sure we've all seen those videos, it's like they'll jump from thermite to Marshall and McLennan and back to Kroll and then to this thing and then that thing. And suddenly, you don't really know what's going on. But I think that's just, the conspiracy culture is super guilty of that. So one would expect that from people trying to make a movie like Operation Terror.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also just wanted to briefly interject that I think one of the reasons why Oliver Stone's JFK holds up so well to this day is because it's coming from the perspective of an investigator who feels that there's something wrong, but is sort of uncovering things in real time. You're looking at the story from his perspective, and they make a point in JFK to show you alternate scenarios, which I think is actually very important to really portray something like this, because when you're watching it, where it's like you're literally seeing in Operation Terror behind the scenes of how it was done. Imagine if a JFK movie was made in the same way, it would probably ultimately be less interesting than Oliver Stone's Jim Garrison JFK movie. If they showed the CIA planning the JFK assassination and how exactly they did it, than what we end up seeing in his movie. So I think there's an argument to be made that having some of it still seem mysterious is actually really important from just a filmmaking narrative point of view, rather than literally showing you everything of how it was done. Because even if that was the purpose of the movie, it does leave some things, you know, it's not as satisfying when you know everything and you can see everything, rather than some things being a little bit mysterious, or maybe it didn't happen quite that way or something like that. So,
well, I will say, I mean, JFK also has going for it the fact that it's about nearly four hours long. So it had the space to work with. I mean, I'm talking about the director's cut, which is the version everyone should see. It had the space to do more. But I know what you're saying. With a film like this, there's no dramatic irony, because we, the audience, know everything as soon as the characters know it, because we're watching them do it. But there's no one within the film who's being fooled, who doesn't see this coming. So there's no dramatic irony, there's no emotional investment in this being revealed. It's like this has already been revealed. So where's the climax? And in reality, the climax was absurd and hilarious and all the more wonderful as a piece of entertainment for it. But it kind of failed as a truther movie because of that. No, I mean, obviously, JFK is a much, much better film.
Well, JFK is also a thriller, which I think is like... And this movie had all the makings of one, if you look at it on paper, but in execution, it doesn't have any suspense, really, and like that at all. It's more just an entertaining watch to see what they're going to do to achieve this and that. But in terms of like a thriller or mystery, it doesn't have that element. And I think that is kind of important just from a entertainment perspective. If you're going to do anything about 9/11, you have to almost figure out a way to put more of that in there. But that's just my own perspective. So I do think they did a good job in many areas in this movie, which I was surprised by. So.
Well, I mean, before we round off, I did want to just briefly touch on a 9/11 movie that's, I think, just come out that we were discussing the other night, Pierce. This one with Charlie Sheen and Whoopi Goldberg. Robbie, have you seen the trailers for this? Do you know about this one?
Yeah, it's quite a strange... I don't understand what it is or why Charlie Sheen's even in it. it has nothing to do with 9/11 conspiracies or 9/11 truth. So it's just incidental that Charlie Sheen's in it, right? It's not...
Well, this is what we were wondering about is, I mean, for those of you who don't know, it's basically about a bunch of people who are stuck in an elevator in the World Trade Center on 9/11, and Whoopi Goldberg is in, like, the communications room or whatever, so she's talking to them sometimes throughout the film. It's kind of a locked room drama or a confinement drama.
Mm.
But it doesn't seem to have anything whatsoever to do with Charlie Sheen's views about 9/11. None of that appears, at least from the trailer, to be in this film. So did they just cast him as a piece of cynical PR and promotion and to try and create some buzz about an otherwise probably quite mediocre film? I mean, Pierce, what were your thoughts on this one?
I think that's definitely what it is. Because me and you were chatting yesterday and going through IMDb of the writer and the director on the film. And I mean, there's nothing in their repertoire that's particularly interesting or groundbreaking. So I think, and Whoopi Goldberg too is a bit of a 9/11 truther as well. Although she's obviously not getting near the attention that Charlie Sheen is for his association with the movie. But it seems really like a very kind of in your face way of just, you know, taking a probably a very mediocre film, but releasing it. It came out yesterday on the 8th, so releasing it just a few days before 9/11 and having Charlie Sheen in, you know, all of the reviews and stuff are just like, oh my God, I can't believe. They're not even really necessarily talking about the film itself. They're talking about, like, it's so disgraceful that Charlie Sheen is in the movie, you know, which even so, you know, just because he has views on 9/11, I mean, it doesn't, like, I don't know quite how they're rationalizing this, you know, like thinking that the government was in on it. Okay, fine. But that doesn't really take away from the, you know, the sort of human drama of people trapped in an elevator. You know, like their struggle is still real and, you know, probably did happen. So I don't know quite how that, you know, it's horrible that Charlie Sheen, you know, how dare he, you know, do this. But yeah, it seems like a really, you know, just sort of a hollow way of, let's just cash in on 9/11 and people's pain one more time. And I don't know. And it almost felt for me like a, you know, you said this to me, Tom, like, you know, oh, it's too soon. You know, people are saying it's too soon to have a 9/11 movie, which is like, it almost seemed like with this movie, maybe it was like a bit of an experiment, you know, like, can we make a movie about 9/11, you know, particularly a movie about 9/11 that doesn't deal with, like, you know, like in United 93, where, you know, they're fighting back, or in the Oliver Stone World Trade Center movie where, you know, the heroic firefighters and whatnot. This seemed, maybe they're just sort of like, can we make a just sort of a movie about people trapped in an elevator, you know, regular people that died on 9/11? You know, can we do that? So I don't know. Maybe it was a bit of an experiment in Hollywood. But it seems more probably like Charlie Sheen is broke now that he's, you know, basically just sort of, you know, unemployable in Hollywood and is now suffering from HIV. And I believe, you know, lawsuits against him over that. So maybe he just needed the money. And an easy way to do that would be to, you know, hop on a movie about 9/11 and make it into this whole controversial thing. Because undoubtedly people are going to see the movie now based on the fact that, you know, it's so horrible that Charlie Sheen is in it. People are going to go out and be like, oh, I want to see how horrible this is. So maybe it's just that, you know, a way to make money and get a little publicity and maybe test the waters for, can we make movies about 9/11? You know, is it really too soon, or is it, you know, okay?
Robbie, any closing thoughts on this, on any of what we've really been talking about today, but in particular Operation Terror and whether or not you'd actually recommend it to people? Any caveats you'd offer while recommending it?
Well, I mean, I would definitely recommend it to people. I like getting people to watch weird movies. I would classify this as a weird movie, even though the movie itself is maybe not trying to be weird or an art piece, but it definitely does, I think, achieve sort of a David Mamet, you know, nice, snappy writing style that at times in the movie really does work. I think the acting is good enough, especially by the main character, the Delgado character, where he's able to deliver some of those lines quite effectively. So I just for that, it's entertaining. And it, especially if you're already familiar with most of these 9/11 truth narratives, you will find it highly entertaining. Even if you think the movie is silly, it'll still be an entertaining watch. And I just wanted to read one of my favorite quotes in the movie. And this is a bit of a spoiler because it's sort of towards the ending. But and this is, again, very reminiscent of Al Pacino and Glengarry Glen Ross. Delgado says, after the operation is completed, he says, two careful years of planning, of putting protocols into place, contingencies, dotting every I, crossing every T. We put in all this work for our country, and because of a handful of incompetent jackoffs, this whole operation is fucked. And those who fucked it up are going to pay big time. The N-word from the DOC, dead. Whoever made 93 miss the field, dead. The asshole who told ABC Building 7 was going to collapse, dead. That was freaking hilarious. And also, the movie ends with literally a PNAC reference where it says, your crucial role in creating a new American century. So I thought that was very fascinating, as much as I wish there was more stuff about neocons, but I'm also glad there wasn't, because I think that I don't know if the filmmakers were that familiar with sort of the Wolfowitz or the other neocon facets of the narrative. So I'm kind of glad they didn't actually have like a Bill Crystal character in the movie, because then I probably would have actually been more annoyed by it. So yeah, recommend it. I'd like to see what other films these filmmakers do again. And I guess in terms of 9/11 movies, just touching on what you and just Pierce said about this new Charlie Sheen one, is United 93 and World Trade Center. I think United 93 was actually critically acclaimed and did very well at the box office. So yeah. I'm actually surprised they haven't done since then another 9/11 centric movie. I guess Zero Dark 30 counts.
Sort of. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm surprised that there really hasn't been any other like big budget attempts, because even with shows like Homeland, there's enough room, I feel like, now in the dialogue to be like, well, maybe the CIA did fuck up on 9/11. Here's the real story behind that. Whereas, opposed to Zero Dark 30, but something a little more down to earth and realistic like an Alex Station story. I actually think now is probably a great time for something like that to come out. And I think even if it was critical of people in the U.S. government or made it seem like they really fucked up in a way that most people weren't previously aware of, I think the American public would be very receptive to that at this point. I think enough time has passed. So, I hope there's more stuff like that in the future. But I think it's, as we've seen with this, it's very, very difficult to try to make a standalone movie about all these facets of 9/11. It's pretty much impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. P.S., would you recommend this?
Oh, yeah. Highly recommend this. For basically all the reasons Robbie expounded on there. I think it's great as just a bizarre, weird movie. That alone makes it worth watching. But, you know, for, I think it's worth watching too for anyone that is interested in the the ways in which films inform us, and people that are interested in, you know, like the stuff that we talk about all the time with like the state and film, but just in general, it's totally worth it. It's worth it also just for, there aren't that many 9/11 films come at it from this sort of more conspiratorial angle, so it's worth watching just for that fact. And on that note, I'll say maybe we can do a follow-up to this. We were talking about, oh, there aren't movies about 9/11. Paul Cross, the director who plays Poole, also directed and starred in a movie called Severe Visibility, which is all about an army major at the Pentagon on 9/11 who uncovers all sorts of stuff. And if you thought Operation Terror was low budget, you haven't seen anything until you watch the trailer for Severe Visibility. But, maybe we could cover that at a later time.
Well, I just remembered, but really quick, there's another movie that I remember my sister showing me a trailer for, like maybe it's 10 years old, I think, called Reflecting Pool. That's about a guy who slowly figures out the whole 9/11 conspiracy. And it seemed like it was on par with the budget of Operation Terror, but I'd have to go back and look. I haven't seen it.
Well, maybe this is an area of cinema that we should revisit, because this has been a fascinating and I think quite provocative conversation for people. And I think we've actually, we've done the movie justice, and I imagine quite a lot of the people listening actually want to see it now. And I echo everything you said. It's a bizarre, unusual, unpredictable, very funny in places, very disturbing and confusing in other places. It's, yeah, you probably will never see another movie like this. So I recommend it too. But yeah, thank you guys. It's been a lot of fun talking to you both.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. Let's do this again.
So that was our discussion on Operation Terror, and hopefully this will be the first in an informal series looking at lower-budget 9/11 movies. There are several others that we have talked about reviewing in the future, so hopefully Pierce and Robbie will be back again soon for another lively conversation. I'll skip all the usual bump for the end of the episode and simply say check into spyculture.com for more, and sign up to my Patreon campaign if you enjoy this sort of content. As always, you've been listening to Clandestine with me, Tom Secker. So thanks for listening, and until we speak again, take care.